Well, from today, speaking of vaccination, the national vaccination effort enters a new phase, with Australians over the age of 50 able to receive their first dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine. This comes as concerns mount over Australia's travel ban, which imposes a $66,000 fine and a five-year jail term, potentially, on anyone attempting to return to Australia from India in a bid to prevent community transmission. The Foreign Affairs Minister, Maurice Payne, says the government is following the health advice. The Australian community says it's being unfairly targeted.
They went overseas with permission or the exemption from Australian Border Force. So they followed the rules, the regulations at that time. It is difficult to blame the victims. They are the victims right now, stuck in India. I won't go that far to blame them just because they left Australia because they were approved to go there.
That's Dr. Yadu Singh, a Sydney cardiologist and president of the Federation of Indian Associations of New South Wales. We spoke to him earlier. Well, Professor Paul Kelly is the man with the most difficult job in Australia right now, the chief medical officer. Paul Kelly, welcome back to breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Before I get to the rollout of the over 50s, can I ask you about the ban on return flights from India and the tough measures announced by the government on Friday night to enforce them, including jail terms? The Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, has said clearly on the weekend the decision to bring in those tough measures was based on your health advice. Did you advise the government to make it an offence to try and come home from India?
Well, I think a couple of important points to understand there, Fran. We were asked to provide health advice to the government, specifically the Minister for Health, because the Biosecurity Act is under his remit, provide advice about appropriate and proportionate measures that are no more restrictive than required to deal with an emergency issue. And so that advice was given and the decisions were made by government on the basis of that advice.
And was your advice to ban flights and to impose jail sentences on those who might try to circumvent that ban?
So the advice was based on what was the public health threat to Australia of an increasing percentage of people, of Australians coming back from India with the virus. And that's a fact that's been noted over the last few weeks. In the last week, we were asked to look at what were the highest risk countries in the world in terms of that, of people coming into our hotel quarantine system and into Howard Springs, the Howard Springs facility in particular. And that was absolutely and clearly from India, people arriving from India.
Okay.
So that was the advice that was given. In terms of the fines and so forth, that is just they're in the Biosecurity Act as offences under the Act. So there was no advice given in relation to fines or jail terms. That's just how the Biosecurity Act works. If there is a breach of what is seen as an emergency, a use of the emergency powers, then that's what transpires. So we didn't give any advice in relation to penalties.
So you were asked to provide health advice about appropriate and proportionate measures, and your health advice was to ban flights from India for several weeks.
Well, our advice was that we needed to do something about the number of positive cases coming into our hotel quarantine because of the risk of incursions, as we've seen again over the weekend from WA. So that was the advice. And then the other part of the advice was where is that biggest risk coming from? By far and away, that was coming from people arriving from India. So that was the advice given, the public health advice, and then the response to that was obviously a decision of government to use the Biosecurity Act in that way.
And in using the Biosecurity Act in this way, we haven't seen it used in this way before. Why didn't we see it used in this way when the virus was raging in the UK and the US?
So that was very early on in the pandemic, you'll recall, and we've been looking at the percentage positive rate coming right throughout the pandemic. And in those first few weeks, yes, there was huge numbers of people who were positive coming in from a variety of countries, kind of rushing to come back to Australia at that time. But then it actually really settled in for the last over a year to being around about 1% of arrivals. So sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less, until about a month ago when we had the issue from Papua New Guinea and there were decisions made there, as you'll recall, in relation to flights from Papua New Guinea and further restrictions on that. And that actually brought the issue, particularly in Queensland at that time, because that's where all the Papua New Guinea flights come into, and over a couple of weeks, that actually decreased the problem. And you'll recall back then that was when we were having a couple of breaches from hotel quarantine in Queensland. So we know the cause and effect. We know how to fix it. And so using the same rationale, when we've seen that massive increase, particularly in the Howard Springs facility over the last couple of weeks in relation to Australians returning from India. So that was the rationale for making that advice. Now, I would point out that it is only for 2 weeks. The instrument itself actually expires on the 15th of May, so it can't continue without further advice and further decisions. And that's what we're absolutely focused on now, to see what we can do to deal with this situation.
So what is
What
is the definition of a high-risk country then that you would evaluate in 2 weeks' time if the virus is still raging in India? Could you change that advice?
I think, as I heard you talking earlier about on your program about the predictions of what's going to happen in India, I agree that it is going to continue to be a terrible situation there, and our hearts really go out to anyone in India, not only Australians but the entire Indian population. This is an enormous pandemic, very clearly underestimated at the moment, I would say, in terms of numbers. So I don't think that's going to be fixed in 2 weeks. This is going to take months to get better, and the vaccine program rolling out in India is absolutely crucial to bringing it under control. What can change, though, is the way that we look at people prior to departure, and so we have already insisted on having a test 72 hours before departure. We are going to strengthen that by using antigen testing at airports as well, and we're looking at various other measures to decrease the positivity rate of flights coming from India, as well as what we can do once they arrive. So there's a whole series of things we're looking at.
So you're not thinking you'll extend that ban?
Well, that's ultimately a decision for government. We will no doubt be asked advice. I'm sure I will continue to be asked advice on a daily basis, and the Department of Health will provide that advice as required. And through the next 2 weeks, we'll be working very carefully and strongly to deal with that matter.
And in terms of the notion of making people, in a COVID-safe position to come home, what about the notion from Yadu Singh, the president of the Federation of Indian Associations of New South Wales, who told us the government should be looking at vaccinating Australians stranding overseas, or at least vaccinating those 600 or so vulnerable people classed as vulnerable? Are you considering that?
Well, it's certainly something to consider, I guess, from the vaccination. We'll get to that in a minute in Australia, but you know, big day today in terms of eligibility.
Sure.
And rolling out to others. But we've had the issue with vaccine supply. We've been very open with that. We are sharing vaccine with our near neighbours, with Papua New Guinea, with Timor-Leste and other Pacific Island countries. So what could happen in India? It's certainly worth looking at. I would say, though, that we know that that many of the Australians that are in India at the moment, they're very scattered. So it's a huge country. Being able to get to them would be a challenge, particularly.
But if we could offer it at our high commissions and other places, are you considering that at all?
It's certainly a worthwhile idea, and I'll take that on board.
But you've not been looking at it yet.
We can consider a whole range of things, Fran.
Okay. Let's move on to the over 50s vaccination, because from today, people in the over 50s group, which I think was classed in the old classification system 2A, will be allowed to attend COVID vaccination hubs for their first injection. If it all goes to plan, that's 6 million Australians vaccinated against COVID-19. How long do you expect this phase to take?
Well, it certainly is a big day. We've, as has been the case all throughout the rollout of the vaccine, we're ahead of schedule on starting 2A. We decided this was the time to get on and open up that eligibility to people over the age of 50. And from today, there's 136 GP respiratory clinics that are already open for bookings, and 400 general practices as well have come forward that they wanted to start earlier than the 17th of May, as was
and they're allowed to
plan. Yes, they're already up on the eligibility checker, and I'd encourage everyone to go and see where you can get that jab, roll up your sleeve and get going.
It's not universal.
And that's in addition to the state and territory clinics, of course.
Okay, and it's not universal, though. New South Wales, for instance, is delaying the rollout until May 17 primarily, I think, because it's got to deal with its 1A priority group first that hasn't received, not everyone there has received an injection. Is that going too slowly, or is this that a reflection of that has more work people to vaccinate in that group?
And so we've got our, sorry about the beeps, there's lots of calls coming in. All states have their ability to adapt to their own circumstances. We've got our the national program, and we're rolling out where we can, and the states and territories that have agreed to do that from today have agreed to do that and are going on with that program. New South Wales has made their own decision. You'd need to ask them about that, but suffice to say that the 1A and 1B continues in every state and territory, that they remain our priority groups because they're frontline and at highest risk of either severe disease or being exposed to the virus. And so that absolutely has to continue, and including and in particular in our quarantine workers.
So for anyone listening, just to be clear again, because from what I'm get the messages here to the program, still a lot of confusion about how people find out where and when they can get their vaccine. Where do you go to find out?
So for the GPs that are eligible, they'll be calling you. If you're in their practice, they'll be calling you. You can also go online at health.gov.au and look for the eligibility tracker and all of the places that are available and who is eligible to go to those places to get the vaccine are available online. There's also a phone option if you go to that website.
Well, there's been a little fair bit of talk about vaccine hesitancy sort of on the increase after the reports of blood clot risk with AstraZeneca. What can you say, what advice do you have for people, particularly who perhaps on the cusp of 50, they might be 51, 52, with trepidation about the blood clot risk?
So, you know, we continue to look at that issue, and the TGA is meeting pretty much every day with international, or every night with their international counterparts in Europe and the UK in particular, because they're ahead of us in terms of the numbers of people that have had the AstraZeneca vaccine, and they're able to follow that. We continue to look very carefully at every report of blood clots and to analyse that as to what the cause is. My clear message is that the benefit of the vaccine outweighs the risk. People are seeing what's happening in India. We know and our absolute objective here is to keep Australia safe while we navigate our way through this to a post-COVID future, but incursions are happening and an outbreak could happen in Australia, and so please do not hesitate. Obviously, if this is not a compulsory vaccine, and so people have their choice, but waiting until the end of the year is not advised.
A lot of people want to wait to the end of the year because then they think they might get Pfizer. Will they? Will people over 50s get Pfizer later in the year?
So we know that we've got we will have 40 million doses of Pfizer coming before the end of the year, but it will be close to the end of the year. Winter is close, and as I say, we can get an outbreak in Australia anytime, and so far we've been very successful in controlling those small outbreaks. But
if people wanted to wait, if they wanted to take that risk, they do the risk-benefit, cost-benefit equation for themselves, and they wanted to wait in the hope they'll get Pfizer, will they be able to get Pfizer?
The vaccination is not compulsory, Fran, and so people will need to make that assessment themselves.
But will there be Pfizer available for people beyond the under 50s later in the year?
Well, vaccines will be available later on in the year. We have the Novavax hopefully coming as well, so there'll be a range of possibilities later in the year. The fact is, at the moment, if you're over 50, the only vaccine that you'll be offered is AstraZeneca.
And just finally, media reports that Australia is negotiating another vaccine contract with the French company, this one Valneva, which, as Norman explained to us earlier, is an inactivated vaccine. So it's not the same as the successful mRNA vaccines like Pfizer and Moderna. Why are we negotiating for an inactivated vaccine when the evidence so far, which is the Sinovac one, I think, is that it's not terribly effective? It's only got a range of effectiveness of about 50 or 60%.
We're continuing to have discussions with a range of companies around the world, Fran, and when we've made decisions about purchasing any of those under contract, then that'll be announced. Which vaccines we get is certainly absolutely decided at the moment. What we have is the Pfizer vaccine as an mRNA vaccine, the AstraZeneca as a viral vector vaccine. We're looking to get the protein-based vaccine of Novavax. All of those are very safe and effective vaccines.
Moderna is the only one designed for the South African variant. Are we looking to get that?
As I said, Fran, we're continuing to talk to a range of companies, and there'll be announcements whenever we make a successful contract.
All right. Paul Kelly, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
We appreciate your time. Professor Paul Kelly is Australia's Chief Medical Officer. So plenty of information there, health.gov.au. The rollout for over 50s begins today. If you want to know where you can go to those 136 respiratory clinics, they're all there on the eligibility tracker, and some 400 GPs clinics from today, though most GPs won't be handing out the vaccine to over 50s until May the 17th.